What's going on, guys, and welcome to the Say Yes Project, where permission is granted. I am your host, Ariana, and I'm a child of God who is here to help you guys accept the invitation from God and all that comes with it. Before we get started in today's episode, I encourage you to follow us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify so that you can get the weekly Wednesday drop. I also encourage you to follow us on Instagram at the Say Yes Project Pod so that you can get regular updates on everything involving the show. Now, the topic in this particular episode is one of my favorite things to talk about. And if you've worked with me, if you've sat in conversations with me in a personal note, the people will already know kind of where I'm about to go. So one of my favorite topics to discuss with people is emotions. And it goes as far as to say that one of my focal points as a clinician, as a therapist, is emotionally focused therapy. And I became enamored with it in my grad program. But I think even as a young girl, I always wanted to understand why people reacted the way they did, right? Like, why do you feel these emotions? Why do you get angry? Why do you are sad? Why are you happy? Like, I've always had this like quiet fascination, which just was nurtured and grown through the years that I've lived on this planet, right? And because of that, and that might be because I was always trying to even understand my own emotions, because I was always very vocal in my emotions. Like, I told my parents when I was sad, I told them when I was angry. I had no problems crying or just really expressing myself emotionally to the people that I trusted, right? And it's so funny that I'm in my role as a therapist, because a lot of times I'm hearing like the raw emotions of people and I feel it so deeply. Like, I don't think I would go as far as to describe myself as an empath, but I do feel what my people around me are feeling. Like, when I get off calls, I cry and I pray for my clients, and I cry and I pray for my friends, because it's just, it can feel so weighty, these things that we call emotions. So I felt like when I asked God in this like preparation time for this podcast, like, okay, so what do you want your children to know about? I kept running across the theme of emotions. And so that made me begin to dive into, you know, what did the word of God, what did God say when he was describing the emotional experience of humans, right? So I don't really have a particular person in mind when I'm talking about this. So like in the previous episodes, we've talked about like specific people in the Bible and things like that, because I feel like every person, every account, the embeddedness of the Bible is not just about, God and all of his love and his wisdom, but it also kind of shows like the converging of the human experience with God's plan, God's will, and all of the things, right? So even listening to a clip I saw like a month ago where a lady was talking about how when she first encountered the Bible and first encountered the Lord in the way she had, she got this revelation from her pastor that like only the first two chapters show the perfection of the human experience. Every other page, every other chapter, every other book talks about where we went left and how the human experience is now riddled with this thing called flesh, and our flesh is very susceptible to our emotions, right? So where do we really begin in this space? I think I want to compare and contrast the different emotions that we kind of experience as a group of people, as humans, and like what God has said about it, what Jesus's experience with emotions were, and even talk about like how do we as Christians or as fresh believers or even the non-believers that are trying to understand it, how do we navigate this emotional experience that we have in this world, but also be obedient and faithful to the one that has called us his own? So let's start with the negative emotions, right? And I don't, that's the first time I'm going to describe them, because I think it's easier for me to start saying that they're negative and then kind of give you like restructuring language around them. Because if you're a client of mine, you know I don't like good, bad, negative, positive, because they're too fixed. They don't leave room for the fluidness that is in our human experience. And it also doesn't allow for us to recognize that God still loves us despite all of those things. They're just descriptive words, right? But if we talk about negative emotions or emotions that cause us discomfort and cause us issues in our life, I really want to focus in on one that I find the most damaging in the human experience. So when I was looking up emotions, I saw a line that said that fear is one of the strongest negative emotions that the human can experience. So that's not surprising to me, because when I was doing my research and realizing like, okay, so what is fear? And like, we know that fear is the intense distress that we may experience from like an outside or even an inside, and they can be perceived or be an actual thing that is going to occur, that's going to harm us, that's going to cause this thing, right? So I kind of want to looked at it from a clinician's perspective. So I know that generalized anxiety is a grouping of symptoms that create intense, excessive, and persistent worry and fear about everyday situations. So that's what generalized anxiety is. You have to experience this thing for like a certain amount of days and check off at least 5 of the symptoms to be diagnosed as a person who has generalized anxiety disorder. So I looked it up, and it said that during 2019, 15.6% of people over the age of 18 experienced anxiety. So when I looked up the number of how many people that are 18 and over in America, that's over 258 million people. So that means that over 40 million people experienced anxiety in 2019. Post-COVID, in 2022, the CDC, and that statistic that I said before is from the CDC, the same statistic, the same group brought out another statistic in 2022 that said that the percentage had went up to 18.2% of people experienced anxiety post-COVID. So that's an increase of 7 million more people were now claiming or describing themselves as having excessive or intense anxiety. It doesn't surprise me being a clinician, but like, it's so powerful to me that like, we experience this fear so much just in this country as America. So we're not talking about the world. I didn't even do it worldwide. I just did America. And that's, you know, very poignant to think about, is that we as a society have fear. And I think that the more we have technology, the more we grow, the more that we see the horrors of the world, the more anxious we begin to feel. So even the experience that I'm noting a lot in my work is that a lot of people have this hypervigilancy, constantly trying to see when the worst thing is going to happen and all of these things, right? And I think that some people in this world capitalize on the fear that we experience. And that's why, you know, if they even threaten that this something is going to happen, then the grocery store shelves clear out, because we're preparing for some fear or some terrible thing that's going to happen to us in that way. And so when I saw that, I said, okay, let me go even deeper into what is the root word for anxiety. And I saw two different things, but I'm going to point out one more, because I think that that is very indicative of what we experience and like why, in my opinion, or even from my study, is why the Lord does not want us to be anxious, right? So the Latin word, and I might butcher this word, is called angar, and it says to constrict. So that's, I think, why fear is the strongest negative emotion that we can experience, is because it's constricting our ability to see anything. If you are in a state of constriction, you can't move, you can't think. You are focused on the binding that you're experiencing in that exact moment. So why do I point that out? because there was other definitions. It was to be distressed, to be troubled, to be, you know, in a constant state of looking around. I said constrict because a lot of times in the Bible, we see the effects of people being fearful, right? So even as I was continuing the study of like talking about fear, it said that fear can cause us to lash out in anger. It said that fear can have us cower in a corner, and fear can make us jump in situations that we don't want to be in or we don't need to be in. And that's why a lot of times I tell clients, do not make decisions when you are feeling exasperated or desperate, because you will find yourself prematurely in a situation that you don't want to be in. And more importantly, God has not called you to be in, right? I want to give like a very, very clear example of how fear affected a group of people in the Bible. And it goes back to our very favorite people in the world. I don't know if they're your favorite people, but they're my favorite people, which are the Israelites. So we recognize, let me give a little bit more backstory, that the Israelites were a group of people who were descendants of Jacob, who was a descendant of Isaac, who's a descendant of Abraham, and go forth, so forth and so forth. So they go through this mass exodus. So I'm kind of speeding through it. They were slaves. They go through this mass exodus. Now they're out in the wilderness, and they are been promised, because it was promised to their forefather Abraham, that they would be a great people and they would be living in a land filled of milk and honey, right? That's what God promised them. But they experienced a lot of fear. Like, you see it throughout Exodus. You see it throughout Leviticus. Well, Leviticus is more about the laws and stuff, but like, you see some of the essence of it in there, but you really see it in Numbers, right? So if you've never read Numbers, I would encourage you to. It can feel a little bit daunting, but Numbers really shows you what some of the repercussions at times when we are too fearful, right? So the children of Israel have sent 12 spies into the land of Canaan on the directive of God, so that they can see where they're going to be and do the thing that they're going to do, right? Well, if you are familiar with that, you know that the 12 went and they came back and they gave reports. So if we go to Numbers 13, chapter 13, verse 31, it reads, "But the men who had gone up with him responded, 'We can't attack the people because they are stronger than we are.' So they gave a negative report to the Israelites in the land they had scouted. 'The land we passed through to explore is one that devours its inhabitants, and all the people we saw in it are men of great size.'" So I'm going to just leave it right there. I'm not going to keep going. But pretty much they provided a bad report out of fear. They saw these great people, these giants of sorts, all of these things. And instead of listening to what God had told them, they brought back poor news and said, "We can't do it. We can't go." And what ended up happening was, if we keep going, is that the Israelites said that they weren't going to go. The only two people in those whole 12 of spies were Joshua and Caleb that said, "We can still go because God said he would be with us." Yeah, they're big, but God is still with us. Well, what was the repercussions of that? If you are familiar in this Christian walk, or if you're unfamiliar, the trip was supposed to take 11 days. It ended up taking 40 years because of their disobedience, because of their fear, because they jumped to the wrong conclusion. They cowered in fear and they missed out. A whole generation of people were killed off that could not go into the promised land because of fear, just because of fear. That's why it is not surprising to me that if you count in the Bible, "Do not be afraid" is mentioned 365 times in the Bible. And why is that? It's because the Lord desires us to be a people who trust. And you cannot trust if you are in fear. It's just not possible. It's very difficult to do. So when you think about that as a negative emotion and how many other emotions become an outsuit of fear, I don't know if that's a word, you'll find that I'll make up words. So like, you know, love me for it, because I'm gonna make up a word. But fear is a lot of times the root of bigger things. So that's why I tell like clients that like anger is a surface emotion. We almost have to dig in a little bit deeper to like, why do we feel anger? Because a lot of times it's because we feel fear. Just like I said, it'll cause us to lash out. Fear would cause us to lash out in anger. We will be worrisome, which is an emotion, in anger. These are things that can happen to us as we're walking this life. And that's why there are even, as much as we talk about the Psalms and how they're, you know, they're amazing and they're beautiful, there are some Psalms that really indicate the struggles of living this life and having to be faithful and having to be, you know, understanding of what is really going on versus what we think is going on, right? So even if we go to Psalms 27, this is a indication of how God wants us to respond to our negative emotions. So it says, "The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom should I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Whom should I dread? When evildoers come against me to devour my flesh, my foes and my enemies stumble and fail. Though in an army deployed against me, my heart will not be afraid. Though a war breaks out against me, I will still be confident." So what I love about that particular Psalms is that even though like it's very much saying that like we're going to overcome, it doesn't mean that things are not going to form. And I think that that's one of the things that we miss out in this Christian walk is like when things start to form, we start to panic and become fearful and then become angry. And then all of these like negative emotions, because we're thinking like, well, God, why are you letting this happen to me? And it's like, well, he said it, like he said they were going to form, right? Like they're going to be deployed. Like they're going to, that's why I love "no weapon formed against us shall prosper," because it says the weapons will form. They just won't prosper. And if you remind yourself of that, it's easier for you to navigate in different spaces. It goes back to what I talked about last week when it says to suffer well, because these things are going to happen. Like you're going to have an emotional reaction to it. Like, I don't want us to miss out on the true lesson by being too settled into our emotions, or we're too dismissive of them, because especially our like more low level emotions, the emotions that causes us discomfort. Because if we are too focused on that, on either side of it, then we just miss the whole plot, right? Like God doesn't necessarily feel like we shouldn't feel these things. It's just more about how do you respond. It's not about how you feel, it's about how you respond. That is something to think about. And I want you guys to reflect on, okay, how have my negative emotions, or how have my emotions that cause me discomfort, you know, pushed me in a direction that caused me more pain than if I had just went in an opposite way and went towards God? That's why if you find yourself in these discomforting places, this is kind of a early point of what I want to talk about later about how do you deal with these emotions, is to read the word of God and go back to Psalms. Some of these Psalms are literally lamentations where you're grief and you feel these heavy emotions. So don't forget that God has no problem with your emotions. He has a problem with how you respond to them, because oftentimes we'll respond in disbelief and in we're not going to believe in God. And that's not how this works, right? I want to spend a little bit of time talking about more positive emotions, or positive emotions that bring us great comfort, make us feel great joy and things like that, which is one of them, joy. So we can never have too little of those emotions, right? The emotion of joy, the emotion of love, the emotion of content, right? And so I'm not going to rehash that emotion, because especially joy, because I talked about it last week. But that's the thing to think about, right? Is that we have an abundancy of this thing. We can be in the streets and we can dance like David, right? We can feel those things. So when you are, you know, recognizing that in this emotional experience, right, your emotion, you being emotional is not just about your uncomfortable, discomforting emotions like anger and shame and fear and sadness, right? You're a whole complete human, right? So that means that you experience a plethora of emotions. I in my opinion, believe that in order for you to feel great joy, sometimes you have to feel great pain. And for you to feel love, you have to have also felt loss and sorrow. So like a lot of times we want to divorce ourselves from our negative emotions, but then only marry ourselves to positive emotions, which creates a constant life of being a seeker of your happy emotion, right? And when you're seeking a happy emotion all the time, that is when we'll stumble into our fleshly desires, because there are some things that can make us feel happy but are not of God. They're of the world, right? So like that might be the joy you feel, or like the happiness you feel, you know, making money but not giving. Like it might hurt to give money versus making money that makes you happy. But God doesn't want us to just make money. He also wants us to be giving. He doesn't want us to be, he wants to be us to be a cheerful giver at that. So that's one way of recognizing the importance of having the full experiencing and not trying to divorce yourself from one emotion or another. So let's transition a little bit into what God does want us to look like, because God has given us, in all of his infinite wisdom and all of his love for us, the perfect blueprint of how to deal with emotions in an effective way, right? He sent Jesus. Jesus was here for so many different things. The top thing was, you know, to, you know, conquer the gate, conquer the grave. But he's also the biggest blueprint for like how we should navigate this human life that we're experiencing, because no matter what people may, you know, naysayers may say, Jesus was all man and all God. So there's nothing that he experienced that we don't experience today. There's scriptures in Matthew that says that he experienced temptation and he experienced hunger. I'm still, you know, still navigating those parts of the text. But I think what was really interesting, I heard once from a pastor that said, like, God, Jesus was tempted with everything we're tempted with. So that means he was tempted with money. That means he was tempted with lust. That means he was tempted with hunger and, you know, all of these different unforgiveness. He was tempted by all these things, because the devil didn't just leave Jesus alone. Like, he tempted Jesus. We know he tempted him when he was on his 40-day fast. Jesus still, you know, and all of his perfection and all of his wisdom, but in all of his humanness, was able to overcome each temptation. So I want to give like a couple of examples of the moments where Jesus experienced the same emotions that we do, right? And I want you guys to, you know, sit there and think about, like, have I ever felt that, like what Jesus is talking about? Like, really? And that's where I always recommend you guys to read the Bible, even when you're listening to me. That's why I mentioned the scriptures in the description box in the bio, right? So that you can go back and look. So you don't take my word for it. Go read the word yourself. The Gospels, with this, which is Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, all have accounts of Jesus's humanness, right? And how he responded to his humanness and how he responded to God through his humanness. And I would recommend when you're reading the Gospels is to, if you see one account of them talking about Jesus, look at the other Gospels and see if there are other accounts and how they describe it, because there may be more details and more inclusion that another Gospel doesn't give. So for right now, I'm going to read the Mark version of Jesus in the garden right before his crucifixion. So if you go to Mark chapter 14 verses 34 through 36. So like I said, this is the prayer. Jesus is praying in the garden prior to him making the moments prior to his crucifixion. Like, he knows it's coming at this point. Like, he knew early, but like when now he's getting closer to the end of his ministry, right? And it says that he brought Peter, James, and John with him. So he brought the people that he was intimate with, or had intimate relationships with. And I mean that, you know, platonically. I think we all know that, but let me just make that clear. And it says when he gets to chapter 14, verse 33 mentions that he was deeply distressed and troubled. So that sounds a lot like anxiety to me, right? I don't know about y'all, but that sounds like the definition I said earlier. But it says, he said to them, I am deeply grieved to the point of death. Remain here and stay awake. He went a little further, fell to the ground, and prayed that if it was possible, the hour might pass from him. And he said, Abba, Father, all things are possible for you. Take this cup away from me. Take this cup away from me. Nevertheless, not what I will, but what you will. As you continue to go, he recognizes that this cup is not going to be lifted from him. It's not going to be lifted. So I read from a study Bible and I love it. So I would recommend it. It says where the garden he was in, which was Gethsemane, was a garden located on the Mountain of Olives. Jesus often went there to pray. This prayer was not uttered by one who was weak or fearful. No matter how much Jesus suffered from knowing the temporary alienation from the Father was coming, he chose the path of obedience with determination, knowing that divine necessity for his death to make atonement for all who would turn to him in faith. So even though it's not a fearful prayer or a weak prayer, I do believe that he had some form of distress that he was experiencing. I mean, it says it clear as day. I'm experiencing distress and I'm troubled and I'm deeply grieved. And I'm asking my Father. Abba is the intimate of dad, right? I'm asking my dad is it possible? Because anything is possible with him. If he would allow this to be passed by, that he wouldn't allow this thing to happen to him. And again, like I said, Matthew also has an account of this, which is Matthew 26, 37 through 39. He also mentions it. I won't read it, but he also mentions it as well. So that's what he's experiencing. That's sorrow. And it's also the sorrow of knowing that this is it for him. Like, he's at the end. And interestingly enough, even if we go further, Mark chapter 15, even him being on the cross and recognizing that he didn't feel the presence of God with him anymore, because God hates sin, and Jesus was riddled with it on the cross. He cried out, like, why have you abandoned me? Why have you abandoned me in this moment? So he felt sorrow. He felt grief in that moment. And that should not be missed. Because how many times have we felt that? How many times have we as people felt like God had to have abandoned me in that moment because I didn't feel him? He was not close to me. Why? And you're questioning, why, God? Why are you? My heart is heavy. My heart is hurt. Well, Jesus felt the same exact thing when he was on that cross, when he was in the garden and praying. Another great example of God's humanity was even in the death of Lazarus. So if you know, Lazarus was a friend of Jesus growing up. Lazarus, Mary, and Martha, they all grew up in the same area. And if you've understand it or read it, right? And the interesting is John is the only one that accounts this encounter, like this situation with Lazarus. The Lord Jesus knew that Lazarus was going to die, and he understood that he delayed his travel because Lazarus had to die at that moment. So they had to go through the whole, you know, grief process. His sisters had to, you know, grieve the loss of their brother. And then Jesus shows up on the scene. And of course, at this point, if even in the other gospels, we already know what Jesus has done. He's let the bodies that are lame, they walk. The blind can see. The deaf can hear. He's cured people of, you know, leprosy. He's healed leopards, right? So like, they sent for Jesus to come, and Jesus delayed his travel because they knew that he would be able to heal Lazarus, and it didn't happen. And so even though he knew when he delayed it and come back, he was going to bring Lazarus to life to also represent his own resurrection coming, that doesn't take away from the fact that when he got there, his sisters are rightfully upset. And they're asking, why, Lord, why did you not come? If you had been here Even Mary says it when she fell on at his feet. It says, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When we get to John chapter 11, verse 33, it says, when Jesus saw her crying and the Jews who had come with her crying, he was deeply moved in his spirit and troubled. Where have you put him? He asked. Lord, they told him, come and see. And then it says, Jesus wept. He wept. He cried. And that was a showing of mourning. That's what you did. Like, you cried and you were upset when somebody died. Because at the end of the day, Lazarus was his friend. And he felt the humanness, the weightiness of what the other people were experiencing, his own experience. Even though he knew that he was going to go and save Lazarus. It says it. If you keep going, it says he does. He brings Lazarus forth. He calls Lazarus to him and Lazarus comes. So if Jesus is this all God and like he don't have any human experiences, then why did he cry? Why did he weep? Because he still was human. That's why he came in this form. If God wanted to send Jesus down, he could have sent him in any form. He sent him in the form of a human for a reason. And that was for us to get an understanding and a blueprint of how to navigate these emotions that we have. That's why, just like I said in the last episode, that quote that I love that says that emotions are sent from the Lord. Because the Lord feels these emotions too. In this human form, he feels it, but in a godly form, he feels it. We've already talked about the fact that, you know, the Lord weeps for us. It bereaves him that we hold on to different emotions and different feelings and different experiences, that he's been forgiven. He's been let go. You know, he still is God. He still can't allow certain things. So that's why it's important to recognize that peace when it comes to Jesus in that moment. And in that place that, like, even in his God nature, he still felt what we feel. And the final example that I want to give is in John as well. And this isn't the only account, but I like John's version, you know, of the events, because it talks about the temple cleansing and what he does. And that's the moment where we can all kind of chuckle at Jesus, because he starts flipping tables. So even though it doesn't specifically say it, so it does say he comes in, he flips the tables and he tells them to get out, get these things out, stop turning his father's house into a marketplace, because that's what it had become when they got to like the Passover and like all these sacrificial points. They would sell, even people who were not believers would sell to the Jews and overprice things, which defeats the purpose of what the point of the sacrifices were. So he went in there and just started cleaning up house. And it doesn't say that he was angry, but I don't think that there's any person that flips a table that can't have some semblance of frustration and anger. You know, it doesn't say it. So I'm not saying that it says that he got angry, but I think we could use context clues to understand that he was not pleased with what he saw. And even the disciples write in chapter 2, verse 17, that, and his disciples remembered that it is written, zeal for your house will consume me, right? And that comes from Psalms 69, 8 through 9, which really encapsulate how, you know, Jesus was rejected by the people around him because of his zealous nature, his, you know, his total conviction of the Lord, of recognizing that he was the Son of Man. He was those things, but he has so much, you know, reverence and submission, or submitting to the Lord's will, that he was looked at as having zeal. And that's what it says in Psalm 69, 8 through 9. That is who our blueprint is a man. When he was a man on earth, he was a human in form who, you know, felt sorrow, felt grief, felt anger, felt happiness, felt all of these different things that we feel like we don't know. We can't look to Jesus as a blueprint because he was perfect. He was perfect, but he still felt. And I think that that's one of the things that, you know, we have to recognize as well. And that's why even Hebrew says that therefore he, which is Jesus, had to be like his brothers and sisters, that's us, in every way, so that he could become a merciful, faithful high priest in the matters pertaining to God to make atonement. He couldn't come in any other form because we wouldn't have understood, because we might have discredited, like, well, he was this, he was just that, like a spirit or a dog or a frog or whatever we could have dismissed it as. If, you know, we would have dismissed it. The people of the day dismissed it. And there's people now walking this earth that also dismiss the word Jesus was anything more than a prophet. But he was all God and all man. And he had to come down in this form to give us this blueprint. So we should not negate the word, the experiences of Jesus, just because he responded differently. Because in reality, that's how we're supposed to respond. We're supposed to respond of like, we can have these real human emotions because they're sent here from God, but we cannot deviate from the will of God, which is oftentimes what ends up happening. That's why I said that anxiety is one of the highest mental health conditions that in America we can have, is because we allow fear to keep us from doing the will of God, whether it is we fear using our talents and our gifts, or we fear, you know, speaking his name boldly and proudly, having zeal, as it says, right? That's why we have to recognize that regardless of the beauty, like that part of Jesus, we have to remember his humanness. Even if we go even a little bit further, it says another blueprint for Jesus says that in Psalms 103, verse 8, the Lord is compassionate and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in faithful love. That doesn't mean that he never experiences anger. That doesn't mean that he never experiences this moment where he wants to, you know, be something, you know, else. It just means that this is who the Lord is. This is who Jesus became. And now we, as the ones that are trying to be more Christ-like, say that, okay, instead of feeling fear, let me have faith. Instead of feeling anger, let me challenge that. Let me not lash out in anger and things of that nature. Even when you are, you know, now we're at this point, like, where you may be asking me, okay, so Ariana, I get all that, but I don't get it. Like, I don't know how I'm supposed to have these human emotions, but not, you know, do the thing that expresses my emotions. So my call to people always is to recognize that your emotions are not deeply connected to your behaviors. They're separate. I can be angry without punching a wall. I can be fearful, but still do the thing. That's why you always hear the phrase, do it scared, because you can still be scared. You just got to do it. Even starting this podcast was a very much a me doing it scared. I'm scared every single time I pick up this mic and start talking, because I don't know if I'm going to say something wrong, if somebody's going to maybe attack me, if this thing is all going to get shut down. I don't know. And I'm fearful of those things, but I try to take on the spirit of Jesus and still do the thing, even if I'm scared, right? One way that you can begin to have a better connection with your emotions is to simply begin to identify them. So that's why I said we can't walk around just being like, oh, well, I'm always feeling good. I'm always feeling great. When you know you're feeling a storm within your heart and in your belly, you're now not being helpful to yourself. And one of the things we know is that God knows it. He just waits for you to say it out loud. Just like me and my friends have joked about, where it's like, well, God, why you even ask that question? You knew the answer to it. But he wants us to say it out loud so that we can recognize our own faultiness in our human nature, right? Like the flesh that we experience. So identifying your emotions become very important, and not being defined by them. Like, well, I'm angry. What that means that anger now describes you. Instead, it's, you can say, like, right now I'm experiencing anger. I'm experiencing, you know, the heaviness of anger. I feel fear. I'm scared, Lord. I'm scared out loud. You can say that without participating in the behavior, but you have to identify them, because if you don't know that it's happening, then you have no way to even look to the word of God to figure out how to not feel those things. Begin to start identifying your emotions. You can do it through an emotion tracker. You could do it through an emotion wheel. You could Google emotion wheels and there'll be like 10,000 that pop up. But begin to identify, what am I feeling? And then bring it to God, right? Okay, God, when I was around this one person, I felt a lot of anger. Explore my heart, Lord. Help me explore my heart to figure out, why do I feel so angry? Why do I feel so much fear? Why do I feel shame? Why am I feeling happy right now? What is going on? What have you orchestrated sending these things to me? Not really allowing them as well, but like sending them to me. So then become inquisitive about them, right? Understand, sit in them, let them roam around before you begin to act. And that gets to the point of, we have to slow down. And I'm going to constantly say that. I probably will say that in every episode, which is like, slow down. Slow down enough to begin to be exploratory of what's going on with you. So like, if you're feeling this anger, okay, why am I feeling it? Why am I feeling sad? Explore it and become comfortable with whatever you get in response. And sometimes it's going to be the thing that makes you look in the mirror. Well, because maybe that comes to your entitlement. Maybe that comes to your unforgiveness. Maybe that shows up your bitterness. And all of those things are not the spirit of the Lord or the spirit of the Lord, but it is the spirit of flesh. So now you have to confront it. Now you have to begin to examine it and understand, okay, so now I got more work to do, because that's the only way that you're going to be able to properly wring out your heart and break out of your constrictions, because Jesus already, broke our chains. We have no chains anymore. We don't have to be chained to unforgiveness and bitterness that's being now expressed through our emotions. We could begin to examine our true identity. It's like, okay, if I'm not, this human skin is temporary and there's a spirit dwelling in me, that means I have to allow my spirit to come out more than my flesh. You have to begin to invite these emotions in, but you have to be able to recognize when they need to go. Because maybe sometimes God does want us to be in a grief season. Again, even some of the people that we talk about a lot, that had to experience great grief, like Job, Mary and Martha, Moses, they felt the heaviness of grief. They felt the heaviness of sorrow. They felt the weighty responsibility of things. And God gave them permission a lot of times to not only just have them, but to speak on them. Another one, I'm going to try and find it very quickly, which is in Numbers. And it talks about the complaints of the Israelites, right? And one of my favorite parts is how Moses responds. Moses doesn't just sit there and like silently doesn't express his emotion. He is very vocal. If you ever want to check it out, look at Numbers chapter 11, verses 8:10 through 15. I'm not going to read it all, but pretty much he was like, I'm tired. I'm sick of this. If this is the life that you have for me, please take me. That's pretty much what Moses said. Like, he was so tired, so exhausted, felt the heaviness. And the Lord heard his cries and answered them. Now, did he take away his responsibilities from him? No, because he had something in store for Moses. But what he did do is he, gave him help. And that's why it's important to understand your emotions, because now you can tell God, who can send people, because that's what he did with Moses. He sought the Lord, he heard, and he answered. That is a Psalms. Like, I sought the Lord, and he heard, and he answered. So that means he may send that homegirl, that homeboy to you, to pour into you, to pray over you, to intercede over you. But that's because you allowed your human emotions to show and went a different direction. You didn't break away from the will of the Lord, but you went to the one that can bring you the most comfort. And he can send people to comfort you as well. We can't underestimate the power and the possibilities of the Lord. So that is why it's important to not only rest in your emotions, identify them, express them, Because now when you have all of those things put together, you're able to better know what directions you need to go, and you can grow in your emotional maturity. Because really what we see from Jesus is a person who was emotionally mature, emotionally capable, and emotionally available. These are all little buzzwords that we always see, like on Instagram, TikTok, you know, Twitter, about you need to be more emotionally available. You need to be more emotionally mature. Jesus is the blueprint of emotional maturity, where he identified, he expressed, but he acted in a way that was honoring to what he wanted to, what he was told to do, what he was assigned to do. A lot of times we feel these emotions, we feel, you know, defeat and doubt, and then we give up. We give up on that thing. We give up on that plan. We give up on that business. We give up on that person. When God is like, well, talk to me first before you just start running off, because I can show you that you have nothing to doubt, that you have nothing to be afraid of, that I am with you. One of the things I want to do is to examine every example for a year, and I still might do it even though the year has started, of where the Lord says, do not be afraid, to understand and read the scriptures of why he told them not to be afraid in that moment. Because it probably goes back to all the promises he's made to the people that he's talking to, because it's always the Lord that says, do not be afraid. Always. I want to end here and just, as I always say, I want to pray that you will allow your emotions to tell you what's going on. I pray that when you are told what's going on, that you will go to the Father, that he will comfort you in your emotions, Lord. I pray for each and every one of you that are listening and under the sound of my voice, that you will recognize that the Lord desires for you to not be afraid, that he wants you to open your heart, to not be constricted, that he can personally save you, because he already has. He has already given you a gift of salvation. I pray all of those things over you guys. I pray that you recognize that that Jesus is the ultimate blueprint, and that he can help you navigate a fallen world, because we are there. These are all the things that I pray over each and every one of you, and I hope that this was helpful. So that is it for today. I pray that this episode gave you another reason to say yes to God. Continue to press in, and as Luke wrote in his Gospels, the heavens are rejoicing over your decision. Love and blessings.